Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Well, you know, this is great, guys. I'm really fascinated with this. I want to keep us in this little, you know, day-to-day, you know, sort of dynamics area. And come on, we got to talk about sex. Who's having sex? What is everybody doing it? Is the people who are divorced just figuring, like, why am I going to stop at making out, you know, if I've already had sex? You know, we've had some high-profile Latter-day Saints. You know, Elna Baker, as well as I can't remember who it was about a year ago who wrote that wonderful essay about choosing, you know, to lose her virginity and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So this has got to be big in this mid-singles realm. So anyone you want to dare speak?
Well, Dan, I feel like you've directed the question to me specifically, talking about divorced people.
Okay, go for it.
let me go ahead and answer that from a personal level and then maybe from a more general level. When I did get divorced 5 years ago, that was a big concern of mine right after the divorce. Like, wow, I've just entered the winter. Like, I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to go about going the next X number of years, who knows, without having sex again. So it was something that was conscious on my mind, and I had to make very conscious, very intentional efforts to not think about sex. And to not think that that was an option or whatever, because I still was in very much the structure of church. So, you know, 5 years ago, the thought was not at all that, you know what, I'm just going to do it because I've already been doing it. So for me personally, you know, 5 years down the road, that's still kind of my mindset. So, you know, I don't know that many other divorced mid-single people, so I can't really speak to that for them. But I think that, you know, as I move further and further away from that divorce date 5 years ago, the thought does enter my mind now, you know. It's like anything in life. It's a choice, like those essays you were referencing before by those sisters. It's a choice you make, and I'm not sure that any of us are like, you know, the mid-singles are completely educated on what all of the ramifications are of either choosing to have sex or not to have sex. So, you know, you say, I want to make this choice, but I would really like to be able to consider what it's going to mean either way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if Lauren or Jenny, if you have anything to add to that, but for me personally, I've not reached that point in my life where I think, you know what, it's been long enough, I'm going to start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But Jenny probably has.
Oh, man. There it is. Whoa, go for
there
it.
There it is. The honesty. No, it's funny. It's funny because when I became a marriage and family therapist about 5-6 years ago, you know, I started thinking a lot about the dynamics of sexuality in general, because I spent a couple years working a lot with sexual addictions, pornography, also working with couples or having emotional and sexual issues in the marriage. So I think sexuality has definitely been something I've been focusing on understanding better in general in the last few years. And it's interesting to try to understand it from the perspective of celibacy. Although in some ways I think it's not a bad thing, but I do think that, you know, it's interesting because that's one question I haven't thought as much or worried as much about maybe as some people, because I see that even in marriages, there's so much dissatisfaction in sexuality, and there's so many problems in the church, whether people are single or married. And some people choose to experience sexuality through pornography or masturbation, some people through dating relationships. as far as those that are single, but even in a marriage. I mean, I see a lot of people who aren't happy in their sexual lives and are, you know, finding their experiences in pornography or masturbation in a marriage. So I don't know. Sexuality is a really interesting topic in general, but I do think that from the perception for a lot of mid-singles, there's this sense of, yeah, well, if I'm never going to get married, what do I choose to experience out of my life, you know?
So I think it does change when you're a mid-single. I think that morals, rather than being the strength for the youth pamphlet, everyone has morals, but they're all very individual. Mm-hmm. And as you start to date someone, part of that dating is learning what their individual morals are. So you have to really kind of set a standard for yourself too. And I enjoy knowing that I can be celibate, because I feel in this day and age with young single professionals, there's such an acceptance of sex before marriage, and it's such a given, that's what you do, that I actually appreciate more than I ever have in my life as a mid-single to know that I can be celibate. And as I date men, them knowing that I'm Mormon, that I will likely not be having sex with them. And if they wonder until they kiss me, they'll soon learn that I really won't be. So I actually have learned to appreciate the morals of the church when it comes to sexual relations more as a mid-single, because it's such an accepted thing now.
So accepted in the culture, the young professional arena, but
yes, not in the church, but in the young professional.
It's not getting easier to talk among your fellow mid-singles attendees about, yeah, I'm, you know, we're really into each other and, you know, we're having sex.
Oh, no.
And it's not a big deal.
So I can know that many people that I date or go out with will likely have already had sex or
are open to it now.
We're open to it, yes. Right. I think that that's more accepted, and I think we're a lot more forgiving at our age and understanding, and it's a part of life. I think that we have a greater understanding of that. But because of that, I can go out with a Mormon guy, for example, and he might not know what my individual morals are, because I think that everyone has to kind of find their own as they become a mid-single adult, the older we get. But my point is, dating outside the spectrum, Mormons, non-Mormons, whatever the case may be, if and when dating them, I feel grateful that there is this standard in the LDS church more than ever before that there's no sex before marriage. Because for me, it gives me a feeling of knowing that there's not that expectation with men I date. But every time I go out with somebody new or whatever the case may be, I haven't been doing that for a while. I have a boyfriend, just in case he's listening, need to know that. I haven't, you know, before that, you didn't know where that other person stood, Mormon or not. What am I going, you know, where do our individual morals connect and where, or are they different? You don't know. When you're younger, you kind of know, you just know, like you kiss and that's it. And we know what's in the strength for youth pamphlet, and that's it. But there's definitely things that vary as you get older.
More diversity.
And more diversity of what people think is okay and what isn't. So you really have to decide what you individually feel as far as your morals go.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that you'd guess that there's more lessons on the law of chastity in singles, or does it come up more often than it would in a typical family ward?
I don't know. Maybe they've given up on it.
Okay, I'm wondering about. You know, part of me is just like, okay, I'm calling the executive director because I need to confess to the bishop, and he's having to book me 3 weeks out because everybody's, you know.
I'll tell you this. Singles ward bishops are well known to be a lot more lenient with sexual confessions than family ward bishops, and there's obviously a reason for that, and I think that. Well, I don't know. But that's known, that singles ward bishops are a lot more understanding more often than not and compassionate than a family ward bishop. I had a friend once say to another friend, well, just go confess. Just go make sure you confess to a singles ward bishop.
Wow. Yeah.
That's actually a common term. Yeah. I've heard that a lot too.
You know, they're just a lot more understanding and compassionate when it comes to that, because I think they've heard it all. Whereas family, that's probably another reason maybe a lot of singles like to go to singles wards, to be honest, is there's that kind of compassion and understanding there, because it's quite the unique experience.
And maybe that's why that one bishop wants you to be a temple recommend holder or working towards it, because he doesn't want to have the lines down the hall, you know, type thing. Yeah, interesting. Well, I don't want to belabor the point because, you know, it can get into this voyeuristic, sensational stuff, but I've certainly have heard from friends that, you know, a lot of times it's not uncommon in this, you know, mid-20s on up to just declare on the first date almost if you're looking for sex at the end of it, because it's so common even in the LDS, you know, singles online or anything else that, you know, the odds are pretty decent that that person will be open to having sex.
That's interesting. I don't know if I've ever had it declared to me on a first date, but I can know by the first time a guy kisses me, for example, you know, what he's really looking for.
Something Lauren said that struck me kind of early on when she was talking, you know, you kind of have to feel out, pardon the pun there, but
I love it.
You kind of have to feel out where the other person stands on that sort of thing. And from a guy's perspective, I mean, when I was younger, when you would start kissing or making out with a girl, you kind of, and I hate to make this generalization for all guys, but, and I hate to make myself sound like such a scumbag, but you kind of rely on the girl early on to, like, you think, well, you know, I'll go probably as far as this girl's willing to go, because that's probably French kissing and no more. But as you do get older, I mean, definitely that changes. So, you know, if I were just to rely on that same standard now, like, I'll go as far as this girl wants to go, you easily would get in trouble nearly every single person that you date. So for a guy, you know, as you get older, it does require a lot more setting a personal standard, which, you know, should have happened in young men's, but didn't happen until I was like 29.
Wow. You know, you have just set back a lot of, because that is, you know, the message that women are that young women are getting is that it's almost their fault, you know, this whole business with modesty and, you know, keeping the guy from it. And I mean, I appreciate your honesty here, but you know,
it's
you're not proud of it, but that's,
no, it's terrible.
I love hearing that. Yeah.
You know, I don't agree at all that it's a girl's fault. I think fault's a terrible word for sure. But, you know, as an irresponsible teenage boy, you're happy to put the onus on the girl to set the level of how far you want to go. Because, you know, as a teenage boy, you imagine going all the way all the time. So probably given that opportunity, a lot more young men would if they could.
Yeah, I mean, I was blindsided the first time I had sex. I had sex a lot before I kind of straightened up at almost age 24, and it was like, wow, this just happened. I mean, I was not even pursuing it, and so I was with you, Garrett. I appreciate what you say there. That is really honest and good to hear.
Yeah, and there's just definitely a variety of moral standards once you hit the mid-30s, I guess, just to emphasize that again, or the 30s, or the older you get, there's just such a variety of standards out there that you have to at one point get on the same page with someone you're dating. It's it's interesting.
Yeah. Jenny, is there anything that you either want to add at this point before we kind of move more into God and spirituality, either from, you know, just from your own experience and observations, or anything from your client insights type thing?
Yeah, well, one thing that was popping up just around this conversation was there was a point in this last year where after seeing, you know, a few years worth of clients and after some of my own dating experiences, I started feeling like, man, I don't know if I want to marry a Mormon boy in the sense that, and I know that this was my own, and I'll use therapist language here because it's what I do with myself a little bit, but it was my own distorted thinking and kind of doing the all or nothing, placing all Mormon boys in this category, or all Mormon men. And I know it's not true. And again, it's oftentimes the people that I'm working with, but it's interesting because there is so much taboo around sexuality in the church. And there's a lot of, you know, we talk about it in a way that I think does promote fear in some senses, and, you know, fear of going too far, fear of masturbation, fear of pornography, and what, you know, if you get involved in any of those things, what will happen to you. And so I think certain men who really want to be faithful and get into their 20s, into their 30s, and aren't married, and yet they've had these sexual urges and natural desires, and maybe just tried to do a lot of suppressing them, repressing them, or again, maybe found some outlet for them in certain ways, but then felt the guilt and the shame. I mean, it's been really, in some ways, as a woman, it can feel frightening that, you know, will the man I date or marry have a healthy relationship with sexuality? And I think in the church, we don't really know how to teach that. You know, if you are going to be celibate, what does a healthy relationship with sexuality look like? And I think that there are ways to go about learning and understanding that, but I don't think we know necessarily how to do it or how to teach it. And so I think it does create a lot of problems and a lot of fear. And I think a lot of women in the church also experience their own unhealthy relationships with sexuality. And then just lots of fear around marrying someone that's going to have struggles with that, or, and maybe men have the same fears. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I think, you know, I've said this before, but I think that, yeah, I think both men and women can have a very skewed idea of what is healthy sexually, and women are so frightened of a man that has looked at pornography or has masturbated, when really most men have done that, or, and I think that so many men can get ashamed of that so quickly, and that can lead to addiction because of that shame. And I've said before, just kind of showing how I think surprised and different, I don't know, just the different ways people look at sexuality in the church. Like I've said to my friends, you know, I'd rather marry a man who's slept around, you know, a ton than a guy who's sitting in his basement. This is just me personally, basement all day looking at porn. Mm-hmm. And they've said, really? What? How, you know? And I think that a lot of these really, really great Mormon guys that have a healthy sexuality, the older they get, they finally need an outlet. And so they'll go and look at porn because they're good guys, right? That doesn't hurt anyone else to go look at porn. It just hurts them. But then they're really, I think, if they're not having sex with real women and they're looking at porn, then they can get, I don't know, for me personally, I'm not, you know, I, like Jenny said, I don't want to stereotype everyone. That's what concerns me, is that their ideas of sex may be very right. confused.
Absolutely.
And yet we're finding that the porn watchers are these really good single men that have just been single too long, Mormon men. And I've thought the same thing that Jenny has at times, like, oh, would I be better off than finding a guy who isn't LDS, that has just slept around and has a healthy perspective of sexuality? Because the older we get, the more we have to, you know, deal with our sexual frustration and the way that Mormon men seem off, sorry about the stereotype, that often I've heard that, you know, really great guys deal with it, isn't for me my ideal.
Right. Good. Garrett, this, let me say this and we can back out of this angle. You're looking better and better, brother, because you've, you know what I mean? And so it does bring up the question to this, maybe before we move into the God and spirituality section. There are going to be a lot of people in this mid-singles group who have children. So in some ways, you know, Jenny or Lauren, you might look at somebody like Garrett and say, okay, 8-year-old daughter, divorced, don't really know what happened there, but I'm sure it was just, you know, nothing terrible, so he's probably a great guy. And you almost, like, could guess that Garrett has a better sense of sexuality and stuff than some of these 32-year-old virgins.
Yeah. That, oh, my you, gosh. You know, the, you yes. know,
so tell me.
But that's just because I'm me, not because I have a kid.
So if you didn't, okay.
No.
That is true. For me, I would say the fact that you had a kid, in some ways, it's like, oh, I don't know. That's our stereotypical judgmental mind,
right.
I guess.
So how off-putting do you think it is for the typical 30-plus-year-old single woman to say, I've got to deal with an ex-wife and, you know, somebody else's child, but you're still in that age where you could probably have a few of your own, you know, without, you know, really worrying about all the statistical stuff after 35, you know, type stuff. Would you say that most people, if they fall in love, a kid or two that come along with it, are people's expectations changing, and children's not that big a deal now?
Yeah, I think they start to shift. I've had friends date and marry people with children, and I mean, sometimes I'll say, Matt, you know, I never pictured this or expected this, but I don't know, when it comes up and they fall in love and it feels like a good thing. I haven't seen that be a block for anyone that I've been close to, at least.
Okay, cool.
I would say that many women that I talk to that are my age and Mormon, including myself, love divorcees. That's like a plus.
Divorcees with children or just divorcees?
Well, children just comes with being divorced. I guess okay. The ideal situation might be someone that's been divorced and doesn't have a child, but I think that many of us are okay with the child as well, because it means that they've tried and that they understand the sacrifice that it takes for marriage, that they're not set in their ways, that they're responsible. Women my age love that. That's what we're looking for, you know? And I wouldn't say that is I would say it's a bonus, I think, for divorced men in the church, personally, me speaking.
Garrett, you feeling good about yourself?
Divorced male on this panel, I guess I better speak up. I've actually heard that from a lot of girls that I've either just been friends with or girls that I've dated. They almost to a T, they say that it seems like an asset more than a liability, that I have a daughter, that they can see what kind of father I am. That I've been married before, that I'm not just some guy that's never been interested in marriage. I've tried it, you know, I tried my best, whatever. And that's obviously nice to hear. I think as the divorced single parent, it's still hard a lot of times to think positively of it, you know, because I can't imagine any of these girls just telling me, even if it's the truth, like, oh, well, you're kind of screwed, like you know, you're in a bad spot, you're kind of damaged goods. So it's kind of hard to buy into all the good stuff that everybody says about the situation. But, I mean, on a personal level, obviously I think my daughter is an asset, it's incredible. To be very frank and honest and open here, when I very first was divorced and my self-esteem was, you know, shattered and I wasn't sure who I was and I was really destroyed in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, I think I used my daughter to try to prove that I was a good person. I overcompensated. I tried to be as good of a parent as possible to stroke my ego. And it's just one of those things that probably, you know, like a bad intention, but it had a positive effect. My daughter got a fairly good father out of it.
Thank you, Garrett. That is really, appreciate that, that openness and that perspective. That really, that's a point that I had never really thought about. So that's what this podcast is all about. I'm just so grateful to hear all these things. So thank you. All right. Let's dive into God and the divine and spirituality and stuff like that. Garrett, do you mind going first again on this little initial foray into this section?
Yeah, I'd love to. I love men first. That sounds great. I'm getting used to this.
Cool.
You know, this is a topic that I think more than any other topic I've thought about in the last 2 years. And really, I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, but what it really boils down to is how I think I'm finally separating my relationship with God from the relationship I have with the church. Whereas the two used to be synonymous in my mind, you know, am I reading in the Book of Mormon every day? That really is the measure of my relationship with God. Now it's, you know, a lot more how I feel. And, you know, maybe it isn't natural for men to really pay attention to how they feel, what they feel. But, I mean, it's been so instructive for me to take that time and see, okay, so the things that I'm learning in church and the things that I'm doing based on church, how are those things bringing me closer to God? And I have to be brave enough to admit that that some of the things aren't bringing me in a spiritual and emotional sense closer to God, that some of those things actually push me away in some ways. And then I have to be brave enough to be okay with that, to say, okay, so that doesn't mean I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't even know what that term means. My dad uses it all the time.
No, it sounds appropriate in this context, so you're good.
Good. So, I mean, for me, it's not like, oh, so I found these things, and a lot of them are just kind of cultural in the church, right, that kind of rub me the wrong way, or that do not reflect my life experiences anymore. That doesn't mean that the church isn't true. It doesn't mean that the church isn't for me. But what it does mean is that I can look honestly at what the church provides me, and I can say that I go each Sunday as a choice, not because I feel like I have to, and not because necessarily I am 100% convinced that it's the only true thing on the face of the earth, yada, 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 but I'm old enough to make a decision about my life. I hold a lot of things very dear. Simple things like I love hearing pioneer stories still. I love going to Temple Square. I love lessons in Sunday school where, you know, the 70-year-old woman making a comment just starts bawling because the church has affected her life so profoundly for so long. I love those types of things. And then there are things that, you know, that just don't resonate anymore. Sometimes those are lessons that hammer away at marriage and relationships. And, you know, I have to just say, okay, this lesson's obviously important for somebody, but just because it's not hitting me doesn't make me have any ill will towards the church. I don't know if Jenny or Lauren, you share those kind of same experiences. Yeah.
Can I ask a question before we have them respond to that?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying you've been thinking about this for the last 2 years and you're beginning this process of sorting it out. Has it freed you up to say, man, instead of sort of letting the church do the work on my spirituality, I got to dive in myself? Have you begun a new practice? Have you begun a different, you know, are you reading different books, or are you, you know, spending more time in a contemplative mood? You know, I'm just wondering, you know, it's sort of like, I can see us, a lot of times we're thinking the church is this vehicle, and as long as we're on the vehicle, it's heading us towards the transformative life that we have to have in order to, you know, be a celestial citizen, rather than just get to the celestial kingdom. You know, we think it's transforming us. Now it sounds like this is the perfect opportunity to say, I've got to get there myself. I've got to plug into the electrical socket myself. Is that happening with you at all?
Definitely. I think, I mean, I can't say that I've started to study a whole new realm of literature or things like that, but prayer and meditation has definitely become much more part of my life rather than things like scripture study or family home meeting or whatever else. And I'm not even sure that that's necessarily good or bad, but I can see, you know, me taking more responsibility for my relationship with God in the way that I communicate it with other people. Before, I think I was always in that missionary mode. It was always in defense of the church or, okay, whatever you believe has some nugget of truth, now let me add, you know, the whole truth, as we say in the church. That has definitely changed. Most of the people who work directly around me are not members of the church, and we get in a lot of open discussions, and I never hear myself say anymore or even think anymore that what they're saying is good, but it's not completely true.
Mm.
I love hearing how, well, let me say this before I forget it. I think in the church, we grow up thinking that we hold a monopoly on quote-unquote true happiness, that people outside of the church, they obviously have some level of happiness, but not like this ultimate level that we've all achieved in the church. And, you know, if that's the case, I don't think I've experienced it either. These people that I work with or people around me, they are every bit as happy as I am and twice as happy as I am on most days. And I'm not just going to say that that's some fluke or that I'm reading it wrong. Right. They're doing something right in their lives. And, you know, but that goes back to, you know, I've chosen this religion for me. But if somebody chooses something else that's completely true for them, I could not speak against that for one second.
Neat. Love that. Either the others want to react to Garrett, or do you do want to just dive in? Maybe Lauren, go in next with just, you know, reaction and diving into your own shifts.
Absolutely. Well, sitting here kind of contemplating how my relationship with God has possibly changed as I've gotten older, I actually don't think mine has very much. I feel like I've always had a very healthy, loving relationship with God and my Father in heaven. I think I've always felt safe. I know I've heard many people talk about guilt growing up, or black and white, right and wrong. Maybe I was just lucky and never dealt with that. I think he's always been my best friend since I was a child. I'll go to him in prayer when I'm angry, when I'm happy, when I'm upset, when I'm saying, why am I not married? You know, I'll go to him, and I feel like that hasn't changed much. What I think has changed, though, is the way I see the church or my relationship with the church. That relationship has definitely evolved. And I would say it's because I'm 32 and I still have this dream, the Mormon dream, you could call it. I will leave a career to be a stay-at-home mom. I want to fall in love. I want to get married. I want to bake cookies for my children and be able to one day attend a family ward knowing that I have kids in the nursery. That's a dream of mine. But I also realize that God might have other plans, and that or there's other reasons for me to still be single. And I'm not jaded, but I guess you could say maybe I'm a little cynical when people think, oh, it just fits, you know, you can make it happen if you want to. There's this mold that you can fit into. You graduate and you get married and you start a family. That hasn't been the case for me. And I don't know if it was, I ever felt that's exactly how I wanted my life to go. I think as a 14-year-old, I actually charted out my future, and I didn't want to get married until 27 or 28. But, you know, that was 5 years ago now. But so I was never the girl, though, that said I want to get married when I was 21. But at the same time, I thought I could be a lot more in control than I am now. And that has been a little shocking to me. I thought that I could have whatever I wanted. And if I want to get married at 30, put it out into the universe and it'll happen. And it didn't.
You can put it out on the podcast. It goes there into...
My name is Lauren Johnson, and I like...
Yeah, here's my turn-ons or whatever. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. That's a little too...
You can call me at... but so I think that I could be a little bit more cynical to people who are 21 and 23 and think that we can just get married. I'm a little cynical when the leaders are saying, get married, and I want to say... you're not, Garrett brought this up once. I thought it's funny. You're not telling us all to have sex because we all want to, and it's obvious, but it's the same thing with getting married. You know, to saying to us to get married isn't going to solve this, you know, dilemma. We all want to get married. We just are in this evolving world, and Mormons are in the world, and we're also getting married at an older age, but we're doing great things. And so I think that my relationship, going back to the church, is what has changed, not my relationship with God. I feel like I can still go to him for everything. I feel like I still have him by my side. In fact, he's more important to me than ever before because he's my family now, you know, now that I'm single. And but people in the church and the lessons in the church, I do feel separated from it. I do feel like I'm waiting. I feel like I'm in a limbo, that I'm waiting for this next step to happen so that I can once again grasp this church culture and be a larger part of it, because I do feel like I'm floating in this universe of waking up on Sunday morning going, should I attend the sacrament meeting at the mid-singles ward?
Right.
Or should I go to the family ward? And I feel like I'm in this waiting game, and I don't like that, but I do feel like, I guess, a little bit, not lost. I don't feel like I'm lost. I feel like I'm in limbo. I feel like there's not really a right place for me right now.
Interesting. Thank you very much for sharing. Both you and Garrett, please, you know, jump in again, you know, revisit. You don't have to be done. Jenny, we're going to go to you next. You've shared a little bit more ahead of time that you seem to this to be the section where you're probably in the most flux right now. Would you say that's fair, or how would you want to take us into that discussion?
Yeah, definitely. And even, you know, in talking about the issues around being single and not married, you know, I find that I can talk about those and discuss those, but emotionally, I'm not in that space of feeling anxiety about those things right now. Though, you know, a few years ago, I was feeling that more. And so, and I think that that's part of what's brought me to where I am now as far as my relationship with the church and my relationship with God. And like both of what Lauren and Garrett said, I definitely connect a lot with, I've begun separating the two, whereas growing up they were very intertwined. And I think as I began working with some of my anxieties around being single and in the church had been so much a part of my identity. It was where my friends were. It was what my community was. I mean, really, the church was such a huge piece of me. And so when I started to feel like I wasn't fitting or that I was failing at what I was supposed to be in the church because I was still single. And it's interesting because even as I say that, you know, there was this other part of me that was loving life. I was loving being single. I was loving dating. I was loving my friends and my roommates. And so it was kind of like this schizophrenic experience where, you know, in a sense, I was loving life just for what the experience of life was. And then on the other hand, feeling this sense of not enoughness in a place that I had often felt defined who I was. And so I think, you know, it really began a space for me to start questioning more, start talking to God more, start dialoguing. And that along with the therapy work I was doing and trying to understand healing in general and, you know, watching myself experience certain anxieties. And I decided, and it's a long story, kind of like Garrett said, I could talk for a long time about all of the different influences along the way. But I do remember at one point deciding that I was done being afraid. And, you know, I realized as I watched some of my own friends, you know, I have one friend in particular that comes to mind who is so incredible and has so much to give, but I see her hold back because she feels like, you know, in order to really feel fulfilled, I need to be married and I need to have a family. And as I watched her, I could connect so much because I thought, you know, so much a part of me has often felt that. And I just remember one day, I don't know, something just kind of switched for me. And I don't know if it was because I had been thinking so much on it and meditating, and all of a sudden, just this realization that I'm done feeling fear and I'm done feeling like my path and my life needs to look a certain way. And I don't know, I just felt really grateful to God for everything he had brought me and all of the lessons that had come to me through unexpected kinds of experiences and paths that I hadn't planned on growing up. And so I began to look at what helps to support that for me, what helps to support the experience of love and growth in my life, and what, you know, what are the things that are feeding fear for me or triggering my own fear maybe in my mind. And so at that point, I realized, kind of like Lauren, that my connection to God has always been a part of my experience. And I've definitely had moments of anger towards him. And, you know, I'll go into conversations with him about things that I don't understand or hate. And yet I've always felt an underlying sense of peace and love around my relationship with God. But more and more, I began to not feel that with the church. And I still have felt a lot of love for the church and the things the church has given me. But there were a lot of Sundays where I would go into sacrament meeting or lessons and feel grief in my heart in hearing the way that we talk about things that does fuel fear. And I think this is true not only for me as a single person, but for, you know, different challenges others might be going through as well. Just that so often we do set up kind of a cookie cutter picture. And I found myself just longing to be able to give and receive love more fully as far as just not feeling like I needed to judge anyone's experiences or my own experience, but that I could make space to trust that my experiences and where I was in my life was exactly where I needed to be for me. And that at some level, it must be what I want. That at the very deepest level, if marriage was really where I needed to be to learn my greatest lessons, it would be where I would be, because that's the kind of God I believe in. And so I have found myself feeling some inner peace in the distancing from the church for me at this time. And yeah, and it's been an up and down road, and I often look out at the future and think I don't know what that means for me in the future as far as the church. I have noticed that my relationship with God feels closer and closer, and I think in part because I've been bringing in other ways to connect to God. And so when I was doing therapy about 4 years ago, I started studying meditation work and some of the Eastern practices and just bringing some of those into my own life. And so kind of like Garrett said, less and less I feel like because I'm a member of the church, I have all the truth. And more I feel like, wow, I've gained some really powerful things from the church, and there's a lot of truth in the church, and there are some really powerful things outside of the church, and there's a lot of truth outside of the church. And so I think there has been a lot of shifting for me, and in some ways I felt really grateful that I am single and going through this, because I think about those who are married and trying to sort through some of the questions right. that I've been going through. Oh, I don't know. My heart goes out, because it's not an easy process alone, but to feel like you might affect your family and children, mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge, you know?
Right. Yeah, what you're going through, and maybe a little bit of what we're all going through, is really what my ex-wife started to go through towards the end of our marriage. And because we were married, and because there was so much pressure, you know, to be this Mormon married couple where we're both active and whatever. She was Relief Society president, and I was in the Elders Quorum presidency. We were working nonstop in the church. We were so busy with it. She was, I guess I could say, she had the courage to pursue these questions in her mind and whatever. But because we were married, it created this great stress, not even so much for me, but for herself. She had a lot of guilt surrounding it, and she had a hard time dealing with it. And that had a lot to do with us ultimately getting divorced and pulling apart our family. And I think, like you say, Jen, it's a blessing. We're lucky to be experiencing this as single people.
I agree.
Where, you know, we are only accountable really for ourselves and the path that we're taking, rather than dragging other people alongside us.
Absolutely. To add to that too, you know, when two people get married at 21, you're building your life together, and you choose a direction, and you go in it together, and but when you're single, everyone's going off in multiple different directions for many years. And the longer you're single, the more unique these directions become. And when you can find somebody at an older age that has been going the same direction you've been going and is at the same place where you are, it makes for a really beautiful relationship. It might be more rare, but it's pretty incredible. You know, I've experienced it, and I feel like, as Jen explained, we all go through these moments of life where we question and we, you know, everything that we were taught, or we head out on a different path for a while. And I think that there is a beauty in getting married later when we've sorted out these issues and these questions, and we are more convicted in what we believe. When you meet somebody that has been going the same direction you've been going for so many years without needing to, you just happen to be going that same way. There's a compatibility there that is so beautiful and so amazing. And I think that that's a real blessing that older singles can find And I feel like that is a great blessing. And we are lucky to have that in our lives.
Interesting. Jen, something that you said and something that Garrett said, I wrote down on a piece of paper, the word space. You know, an open area seems to be what you're kind of saying as you're in this uncertain position about the church and you're not going and hearing lessons that sometimes do this. And it's almost like space is so important. It's important to find those gaps where the gospel doesn't always have a track that you can, you know, so easily fall into. So are you finding, is that kind of what you're enjoying with through this meditation and these other things, to where you're not filling your head just with these messages from others, and you're really, again, I kind of used it earlier with Garrett, you're plugging into the source itself rather than.
Yeah, and it's been kind of amazing because I, you know, it triggered up, even beginning to ask questions brought fear up for me because I'd always felt like certain questions are okay, but certain questions you don't ask. And so when I began to ask and I would sit with things, and listen to my heart and listen for God and the way that I hear him, you know, I was so amazed to find out that he wasn't afraid like I was.
Awesome.
He wasn't afraid of my questions. He wasn't afraid of anything. And I think I'm just beginning to touch on what that is like for him, because every time I experience it, I'm amazed.
So you have not offended the spirit. Anything else, like the spirit showing you how much bigger God
is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome.
And it has been amazing, and to realize God's love as well. And I remember even taking a question to the space of meditation. And this wasn't too far back, but it was in regards to in a sense, some things around the church and what do I do? Do I do A or do I do B? Do I, you know, continue on in this area of the church, or do I step back in this area? And I remember just having this real strong feeling of, I don't care. I don't care what you do. I mean, your value to me is in no way based on whether you choose A or B. And that was kind of the feeling I was getting from again, how I hear God. And I was kind of surprised by that feeling, because I'd always assumed that God would say, you know, do things the way the church would say to do them. And yet there was this experience coming that it didn't matter to him which decision I chose, but the feeling that came up was, but whether you choose A or B, if you're choosing it out of fear, you'll continue to suffer. And so again, this fear and love concept is one I've really been noticing in how it affects me. You know, when I'm feeling afraid, how do I treat others and how do I treat myself? And when I'm feeling love, in the sense that nothing I do or nothing anyone else can do can really hurt God, and that God is there to support us through our paths, through our experience, and how can I best understand what this is about for me or about for others, and come from a place of love. You know, it's just been amazing to feel the freedom in that and feel the God in that.
Do you feel then, Jenny, that like with the church, you feel fear then? Like fear of?
I feel like there's been both for me in the church. I feel like the church has been a place where I've learned a lot about God and God's love, and interwoven throughout all of it has been fear-based messages as well. Mm-hmm.
And it's coming from the people or coming from the gospel? Because that's where I'm like, you know,
yes.
The scriptures are pointing us to where exactly you are. But yet, I think it's just the rhetorical level, you know, of what Sunday is. And again, it's who knows, you know, it's sort of a group gets together and you kind of naturally find something that's more safe. And sometimes fear and don't step outside the lines is the safe thing. And so that's what you get. But so, but you'd say you are finding it then, just the message comes from the people rather than the scriptures or, you know, what it's taught you.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I do think that there is scriptural language that's fear-based as well.
Yes.
Though, again, if I'm reading it with the spirit with me, I think, you know, I'm able to kind of sort through it.
Right.
But I do think that there is language, you know, and I think it does affect certain people, and I think there's moments in my life that certain languages have created fear in me from the scriptures as well, or from prophets' talks or apostles' talks.
Yeah.
And so I think there are certain words, and again, it might not be what they're meaning, but maybe our own interpretations. And so yeah, and it's interesting too, because I've also started to think, you know, I don't know that it would have mattered whether I was born and raised a Mormon or any other religion or any other experience. I mean, I think that just coming into this mortal world, we will pick up fear-based thinking. You know, it is our world culture, is to be afraid. And it's also our world culture to love. You know, we see both kinds of experiences come out of all sorts of religions and races and families. And so I don't think it's something that's unique to the church, but right. I also don't think the church is immune to it, if that makes sense. It seems like the church is very much just experiences it just like a lot of other kinds of places do, you know?
Terrific. Lauren or Garrett, any questions to explore a little bit deeper where Lauren went or where Jenny went, or anything that sort of echoes more that you haven't said? I'll just turn it back to you two for a second before we wrap up. But thank you, Jenny, for sharing so much. We love that.
You're welcome.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I could say it more eloquently than Jenny did. I've experienced, you know, a lot of those same feelings. I mean, ultimately, I have a really good friend, and we discuss these topics a lot. There was a time a couple years ago, actually, maybe only a year ago, that I was still active, but questioned everything, even to the existence of God. And ultimately, what I came away with was kind of that same sentiment that Jenny expressed, that God, if nothing else, I believe in my core that God is love. And anything that engenders that feels like it comes from him. And anything that doesn't, anything that causes me anxiety or fear, probably doesn't come from him. And I think my greatest fear in regards to the church has always been finding out that it's not true. So that fear causes me not to ask a lot of questions of God, of myself, of anybody else. Certainly not in Sunday school, you know. I'm not going to raise my hand and be that guy.
Right.
It's going to ask an actual question. But as I was able to strip that away and actually ask questions, because if you think about it logically, finding out a truth, there should be nothing scary about that at all. So if it's true that the church isn't true or whatever.
Right.
You know, asking those questions shouldn't induce fear. It should be something that your heart and your mind want to do. So I think I personally wish that there could be more open discussion about any topic under the sun in church. You know, what better place than at church to discuss these things if it's really a true body. But that doesn't seem to be the case. I agree with Jen that, you know, a lot of things are based out of fear. And I understand from an organizational standpoint why that is. We all, you know, on a base level need to be on the same page and whatever. But as you get older, as you become a mid-single and an older single adult, these questions are going to come. They're either going to blindside you or you can approach them willingly. But
awesome.
I don't think anybody our age has avoided them. And so if you can just embrace it and ask the questions that you've kind of always been pushing into the back of your mind, the world opens up and who God is and how you experience him in your own life, I think, becomes a lot more poignant.
Love it.
I think Garrett said it perfectly, though, that he said there isn't a single adult, an older single adult out there that hasn't explored these things and explored our faith. And I think that pinpoints one reason why single adults in the church should be celebrated. We're not faithful because we got married young and now are realizing, oh, I guess I better go because it's a responsibility. We're doing this on our own. We're exploring our spirituality and our faith and our relationship with God for the purely for us as individuals, and we are able to get together as friends
and have candid conversations. Conversations that might not be okay for between a husband and wife, as single adults and friends, we're able to talk, and we are doing incredible things. I think a lot of us have had to overcome fear because we've had no choice. Life hasn't turned out the way we thought it was going to, and we want to make the most of our lives. And like I said, again, we're starting businesses, and we're organizations and nonprofits and becoming artists. We're doing incredible things. And throughout it all, we're staying faithful. And it should be such a celebrated group.
Woohoo! I love it.
And I feel like that's maybe what isn't shown, or what people don't see that are outside of, you know, looking at us from the outside. They don't see what an incredible celebrated group this is, and what powerful things we're doing, and what powerful testimonies we must all have, because we're doing this all on our own.
Very cool.
In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
All right, cool. Dig it.
That's a joke.
I don't have a problem with that. No,
I'd like to bear my testimony.
Yes. Hey, you guys, I have enjoyed the heck out of this. Are you guys satisfied? Have we kind of covered most of the things you hoped to cover today?
Feels good to me.
Yeah, I'm happy with the discussion. It's a bottomless topic.
Yes, for sure.
I know. It's like,
I love the points that we've touched on, for sure.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I've appreciated this look. I've learned from you guys. I know that, you know, as I do the post-production on this, there were like these, you know, I mean, all of it was interesting, but there's these five or six really big ones that I'm going to be writing down and working into my shtick. You know, not my shtick, but just, no, there was some solid gold, really deep stuff. And I know that our listeners are going to find that and really appreciate it. So you guys have been brave. You've been open. You've been, you know, really demonstrating your faith and your stuff by putting this stuff out into the universe. And I'm willing to celebrate all of you the way, Lauren, you said that you should, to be a celebrate. And so, and I know our listeners will too. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to head out of this thing. Listeners, please come to the blog and comment on this episode, share your own stories, engage these guys. I'll invite Garrett and Jenny and Lauren to show up at the blog every once in a while and make sure especially to answer anything that's specifically directed at them. But let's have an ongoing discussion and get involved in all the Mormon matters and the Mormon stories community type things. There's a lot of people that are connecting in all sorts of different ways, and when you're in these unique situations, I think that's the thing that binds all these communities together, is there's so many folks who are, you know, hanging in there, but life is lifing and showing them new things. And these are good places to hang out and kind of sort and find companions along the way. Not necessarily dating companions, but just people to know that you're not alone. So thank you so much for that. While you're there, it is a big part of my life that your contributions financially do support. So again, anybody that can press a subscribe button or a one-time donate, that's always great too, and I appreciate that. And I'll just again thank this wonderful panel and say goodnight to them. Good night, you guys.
Thanks. Good night.
Thank you.
Night.
Okay. We're going to cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.
as well.